When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Why don't you start the intro?
Hello, son. How are you?
Ah, very nice of you to ask. I'm doing very well. How about yourself?
I'm trying to be okay.
Trying to be okay. We spent the morning together, didn't we?
Are you referring to this as an afternoon?
It is, in fact, the afternoon. You're I think we can give away that sensitive information.
That's very, very important. This is an afternoon.
Wow. So fascinating. Thank you all for listening. A reminder to everyone that we are approaching the end of Season 2, and if you have any questions you'd like us to answer in a Q&A episode, you can send us those through Facebook or our email at grumpygolemproduction@gmail.com. That's grumpygolemproduction@gmail.com. Welcome to Spies and Lies, an espionage podcast, co-hosted by me, Omri Rose, who spent his childhood living undercover, thanks to his dear old dad and co-host, Jason, a retired former spy master for one of the top intelligence agencies in the world. Without further ado, let's dive into today's episode. Estonian hero to spy, Deniss Metsavas. Had you heard of the man before?
I did.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. In an article for The Atlantic, written by Michael Weiss, he writes, "It was a foggy morning. Metsavas climbed into his car with his young son and took him for his first day at a local nursery school. Once there, the boy did not want to release his father's hand, eventually relenting only after Metsavas promised he would bring him ice cream. Instead, as many parents do, he got back into his car and called his wife to tell her how the drop-off had gone before starting the engine and setting off for work. He had driven only about 200 yards when he was pulled over by an array of vehicles, agents surrounding Deniss Metsavas before escorting him out of his car and placing him under arrest. For more than a decade, while he represented the Estonian military on television, while he served in uniform in a war zone, while he rallied against Russian trolls on Facebook, Metsavas had been spying for the Kremlin. The year 2018. This is no Cold War spy. No, no. This is a spy of today. You said you'd heard of him before. Care to share how, when, what?
Well, you read articles about people who are caught or friendly services who engaged in situations where they want to share it. So you get to know these things. If something is openly published, then obviously one knows about it and one is drawn automatically to read about it. That's how you know about it.
Mm-hmm. You take this story and you could put it in the Cold War time. You know, you could put it in the 70s and it's the same kind of thing going on. I mean, different country maybe, because Estonia was back then part of the USSR, but it's amazing to me how timeless this story is in so many ways.
Well, I think we're going to deal here with something we've never dealt with before. We talked about it, but we haven't actually discussed it, and that is a different kind of a recruit and a different way of running a person. And I think this will be interesting in this episode.
So we will start with a little background as we do. Estonia, Russia. What are these places? Well, Estonia is a relatively small country. It's got a population of about 1.3 million, and it is bordering Russia on the west of Russia. So it's, you know, close to Western Europe and all that. It's also a EU and NATO member as of 2004, and it adapted the euro in 2011. It was the first former USSR country to actually do that. And as that statement will imply, it was in fact part of the USSR throughout the Cold War, and it only gained its independence much later.
Well, not 100% correct. It was independent in the past before the Russians took over. So it did have independence like all the other Baltic republics. So it wasn't like it was never independent. It
no,
was
for
independent.
Sure. The history of...
There's a little bit of a different history. So it's a bit different.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into the history of Estonia. Obviously, it was independent at times, then it was taken over by neighbors and other times, and all sorts of different empires and changing territories and things there. But what's interesting about the Estonian nation today is that it is known to have one of the best anti-Russian infiltration agencies in its internal security service known as KaPo. Why? Well, they've had to deal with this quite a lot. Estonia's population is made up of about 1/4 of Russian citizens or Russian origin citizens. During the founding of the modern Estonian state, it did its best to kind of purge anyone with ties to the former Soviet Union. But nonetheless, you know, certain people had to be grandfathered in different positions because of expertise in different things. And because of the proximity to Russia, a relatively large border that's very forested and mountainous, so it's a little harder to kind of police in that sense. And the linguistic and language ties and family ties and things, there's an increase in these kind of infiltrations and, of course, Russia's interest in doing so. Partially also why they joined EU and NATO and all that stuff quite early compared to many other Baltic states to ward against this. And so the KaPo Internal Security Service has a good record of getting the Russians out and dealing with them quite harshly.
Well, there's something else we have to mention here, that is that one of the policies of Russia when they took over, the Soviet Union, when they took over some of these places, was transferring Russian ethnic people.
To make it more Russian.
To make it more Russian, to have people they can trust, or they could have people they can, to change the ethnic numbers so they don't get independence, or when they get independence, it's more difficult. It's something that's done all over the history, over the years. It's been done through the old empires, even
Rome used to do this as
Rome's
well.
Rome used to do it as well.
Move populations around and try to Romanize them in different ways.
So different people were moved to different places around the world. That's how different minorities found themselves in different parts of the world, and they're not even belonging there. And of course, sometimes it's successful, and sometimes it isn't. In the Baltic case, the Baltics had their own identity, but they were not Russian. So if you want to make them Russian, you try and bring more Russians inside. Now, when you become independent, what happens to the Russians? The people that were born already, sometimes even two generations, say they feel themselves as part of Estonia or whatever part of, if it's Latvia or Lithuania. So they feel part of their country. So what do you do as a country? What do you integrate the people? You just don't kick them out. They're part of the country. So it's a big question, big dilemma that these countries and services have to decide.
Right. You don't want to turn these people into second-class citizens either.
So they're first-class citizens, but are they trusted? Yes. But you probably have to have a second eye on them.
Which brings us to this story.
Really?
Because Denis Metsavas was born on August 4th of 1980. That's pre-independence of Estonia. And he took the last name of his grandparents, who were born in Metsava. His grandfather was a Red Army fighter, so this is a Russian-Soviet fighter who participated in the 1944 World War II capture of Tallinn in Estonia, where he then, like my father was saying moments ago, kind of stuck around, where his father, Pyotr Volin, was born in 1953. His father then served in the pre-1991 Soviet Border Guard, so that's a department of the KGB, and later in the prison services in Estonia. So this is exactly what my father was saying. This is a family that was moved there by the Russians, initially part of the liberation, and then kind of was placed there. So Denis Metsavas' father grew up kind of in that area and, you know, worked in that area. And of course, then Metsavas was born and grew up there. And his mother, who was an obstetrics nurse, immigrated to Estonia after marrying Volin. So here's a Russian family you could say, who grew up in Estonia and tried to, you know, become a part of the society. And we'll see how successful
from there,
they were.
They were very happy to be under the Russian rule. For them, it didn't. For them, it
at the
was
time, in the beginning, time, it was still, you know, them, part of Russia, part of the Soviet Union.
They were not looking to become different. They were Russian. They didn't feel non-Russian. They were Russian living in Estonia. And Estonia was part of the Soviet Union.
Right. Now, Metsavas and his father, Volin, both became Estonian through the naturalization process in 1990, a year before Estonia became independent from the Soviet Union. Metsavas attended a Russian language primary school and was heavily involved in the Lesname Russian community there. So basically, it was a little pocket of Russians living in Estonia who spoke Russian, and there was Russian language stuff going on. He only started to learn Estonian, for instance, when he was 6 or 7. But by the time he was an adult, of course, he was fluent in Estonian and Russian and English as well. He grew up in this jungle of apartment houses in Tallinn, built for Russian workers initially who came to Estonia to work. But ever since he was a child, Metsavas wanted to be this kind of Hollywood action hero soldier that he used to see on screen. He enlisted as a high school graduate with high enough grades to qualify for a military academy, where he was commissioned as an officer. His parents, that same year, divorced in 1998, and his father moved to Vladivostok, which is far in Russia's east. His father was always very patriotic and pro-Russian, which we will see how that connects to things later on. As we said, in 1998, Metsavas enlisted in the military in the Single Guards Battalion. Later in 2000, he became a group commander in the Guards Battalion and later completed an officer's course. From 2007 to 2009, he completed a master's degree in military management. And then for 3 years, he did a refresher's course with the Finnish Defense Forces and served as a battery commander and head of the artillery school for the artillery battalion. 2012, he went on a NATO foreign mission to Afghanistan. So he was deployed with NATO in Afghanistan in the combat zones. And then in 2013, he was part of the main staff of the Defense Forces in the Artillery Inspectorate. His tasks included development and organization of the artillery and the training of active soldiers. So his ranks in 1999, he enlisted as an ensign. Then he was a junior lieutenant in 2004, a lieutenant in 2007, a captain in 2010, and a major in 2015. I stipulate all of this because this is a man who basically is career military. He's going, he's doing well. Right. And this is what he wanted to do. This was his aspirations. And from the outside, this is a man on the rise, doing well, and showing what Estonia was all about. So what if he was not Russian-born, but Russian
minority
ethnically?
In Estonia.
He's Estonian.
Yes.
He speaks Estonian. He's showing that even these minorities in Estonia can rise and become a part of Estonian culture. So what happened to this Estonian hero? Where did it all go wrong?
Well, you'll tell us, I suppose.
Over the years, Metsavas would visit his mother's family in Smolensk, Russia. And during one of those trips, he must have come to the attention of the GRU. We've mentioned the GRU before in this podcast, but as a refresher, the GRU is Russia's military intelligence. They used the tried and tested methods that they knew. They would uncover the backgrounds of regular visitors to Russia, targeting those who would benefit Russia the most. And then through surveillance, they would become familiar with that person's contacts and activities while they were in Russia, and eventually arrange a honey trap to involve their target in an illegal or embarrassing situation in order to use the evidence to secure their target's cooperation. That was their MO, one of the ways that they operated quite regularly. And with Metsavas, they clearly saw a target. Here's a person coming and going from Estonia with family ties. At some point, he came on their radar. They saw, okay, he's enlisted in the military. This could be potentially useful. Now, we don't know exactly why or when he became on their radar, but I think that is the most logical reason why he would. Any other thoughts?
Well, yes. I would say two. I mean, first of all, we don't know. I mean, at least from what I read or saw, it's not clear. But it's two obvious things that come to mind. One, as every foreigner, as now is an Estonian national, if he has to go into Russia, he has to fill up forms. I'm not sure even then that there was no registration. I don't think the Russians would allow open borders even to Estonia or to the ex-republics. It's not in the DNA to do that.
Well, here's the thing. Metsavas had a Russian passport. He was only nationalized to Estonia later.
But he was still, when he goes into to Russia, he has to show some kind of ID.
Yeah.
And even if it's a Russian ID, there's a form or something he has to fill out.
Yeah, of course. There would be like a border. It's not an open border that you just walk through. There's border control.
And he never hid the fact that he was in the military in Estonia. So that's one way that they could have found out about him. And that's just a normal routine check that people do on the border, and then it goes up to wherever he goes to, and he gets to somewhere.
Sure. I mean, a Mexican-American going to Mexico, going through the border, you would show your Mexican passport, and they would register it. So
yeah, sure,
kind of
through the Rio Grande, they would show where they cross the water. Now, the other way I would say is that someone in his mother's family worked or had connections or contacts and reported to whoever they felt it's right to that they have a relative who is visiting them, who comes around, and he works in the military in Estonia. And that's how they came to know about it. I don't think it came from someone in Estonia who pointed out about him. And I don't think it's just someone on the street that he was partying and then all of a sudden they said, let's do something.
No, because the method came on the radar and they
came on the radio and they decided, okay, let's do something. And the fact that they did something, as you will soon explain to us what exactly happened, makes it more interesting from the local point of view.
You don't think maybe it was something from his father's side, being a staunch Russian supporter?
No, I don't think it came from there. It could have come from anyone from his family in Russia, but continue.
You make the wound cut even deeper if it's a family betrayal.
Well, let's hear what's going on here.
Viktor Suvorov, a GRU officer who defected to Britain in 1978, wrote in his book, Inside Soviet Military Intelligence, that
if the KGB is a vain and arrogant courtier, having the right to speak at the King's Council, the GRU is an ugly hunchback.
Most GRU officers were picked from the Russian Armed Forces, then sent for at least 3 years of training at the Military Diplomatic Academy in Moscow. According to an Estonian Foreign Intelligence Service analyst who requested not to be named, he said that the GRU's primary objective was to prepare Russia for war with the West. The GRU's agents aimed to steal military secrets, to learn as much as possible about strategic strengths and weaknesses, as well as infrastructure, telecommunication systems, and, where relevant, nuclear weapons capabilities. These were the rough and tumble guys, not afraid to get dirty, not the sophisticated guys, the ugly hunchbacks, as we're told. And they found a candidate in Metsovas that seemed perfect. So what did they do? In 2007, Metsovas was visiting his relatives in Smolensk once again, as he would often do.
Well, he was 27, let's remember that age.
He was out with a cousin at a nightclub, and there he met an attractive woman and spent the night with her. Feeling awkward, knowing that it was a one-night stand type of thing, he went to buy her flowers that evening, thinking that he couldn't just leave her money since she wasn't a prostitute, and he left her flowers by the bed and went home to sleep afterwards for a few hours. When he got up and stepped outside to do some shopping, Metsovas was almost immediately approached by two men dressed in plain clothes, saying that they were police officers. Immediately, they showed Metsovas a signed affidavit by the woman saying that Metsovas had raped her. He could face 15 years in Russian prison. Metsovas denied that he did anything wrong, the officers agreeing, but that they had the affidavit, warning him that it didn't look so good and that he should come with them to the station. There, they also showed video of him and the woman in bed. It was a perfectly executed honey trap. The police said they could solve Metsovas' problem if he cooperated, and he agreed. He signed forms that he couldn't remember the contents of and was released. No information asked at the time, no instructions given at the time. He was never handcuffed, never booked, never offered a lawyer, and never read his rights. It was his first time in a police station. And, of course, Russia was not particularly known to be friendly to those being held. His instincts were to get out ASAP. He didn't contact the Estonian embassy or reveal the events to the Estonian military, fearing that any hint of his criminality, false or otherwise, could ruin his military career. He went home. He told no one.
Well, the embassy is in Moscow. He's far away from Moscow. The city where he went to is really nowhere. The closest place would be probably Tallinn anyway. No point in him trying to go anywhere.
Could call, theoretically.
No, it's not. He wouldn't want a phone. So basically, the first thing you do is you'd say, okay,
let's get out.
Get out. Let's get out of here.
Now, which is right in that sense.
Now, if he's 27, he's already not, he's not a 17-year-old.
No, he's 27.
He's already in the military.
He's already on the up.
He already knows a couple of things. He knows how to behave, or he doesn't. But it scares him. This incident scares him.
So, it would scare anyone, I would think.
I would think so, too. Especially when you're on video. That means you know that it's not a mistake. They know that it's not the first time, and
well,
they've done
it. Shows a few things, really. It shows that he didn't know it was the GRU at the time, but they had prepared this.
Of course they prepared that. I mean, the girl was there to set him up. The question is, was there anyone else to set him up, to go up to the nightclub? Who arranged for him to go to the nightclub?
The cousin, was he involved? You know, this is why you bring the family member in before?
Maybe I bring them a family member, because how would they know to have the lady or the girl there in the nightclub unless they prepared it in advance?
Or I would argue that they could
that
be...
It wasn't there, she just picked up anyone and they had someone? No.
I would argue that maybe they saw that he was coming into town. They knew, based on previous surveillance, that he frequented certain nightclubs. They put their agent, the woman, on alert, or their asset on alert. They started following him. They saw that he went to a certain nightclub, and that's when they sent the woman there.
They could have been waiting with that woman and had all the infrastructure ready, as they did, because they couldn't wait for that to happen before. It was a one-time thing. He never saw her before, never saw her after.
You could question, you know, maybe how often do they do this? You know, how many people do they have running doing this thing?
I don't think that they might have an apartment there that they use, but again, this is not a big place. Okay, if you look at it in the map, where
Smolensky, yeah,
it's a small little town. You know, they don't have 10 discos and different and the women and the girls are just to recruit them there. No, it was something they had to plan in advance. That's why I think they had a little bit more help locally. It's Russia, and it's not just okay, let's wait for him to go out. There was a certain pattern. I think that's the direction I would take, but I think it's not relevant for the rest of the story. But I think it's just to remember that this is how it happened. He himself never questioned it afterwards. And the question is, did he ever go back to the town again?
Yeah, he went back to Smolensky to visit his relatives, sure, but...
Why would he want to do that after he was trapped there? That's a different question.
Well, I mean, we don't know. My research doesn't show that he went necessarily to visit a relative. I'm assuming he visited his relatives.
I wouldn't
want
to go visit your relatives again after you've been... Something happened, unless you're already working for the other side, and then that makes sense.
Well, that's what
but we'll talk
what
about
happens.
It.
But I want to ask you, you know, he's in this situation, okay? This thing just happened. He doesn't contact anyone. Now, okay, his father isn't a spy. He can't call him up and go, hey, Dad, what happened? Help me out here, which is probably what I would do. But
was that phone call I missed when you phoned me? No, that was someone else.
No, that might have been my brother.
No.
I'm just kidding. What should he have done?
Well, let's him get back first, and then we'll talk about it.
Well, he did. He left. He went home.
And then what did he do?
He told no one.
He
kept about his life.
Okay. All right.
So what should he have done? When that happens immediately, what should he have done, if anything? When you're teaching your agents, if something like this happens, what do you do?
Well, that's a different situation
because then they're already agents or whatever.
Exactly. He's just an army guy who's from a Russian background with a Russian family who speaks Russian, who was just involved with a woman, found out he was filmed.
It's scary.
Compromised.
Very scary.
He doesn't want to do anything about
it. One day later, signed affidavit. This is clearly planned.
Okay. Obviously, he should have come and spoken to his commanders. Okay. But let's say he said, okay, maybe it's going to go away. But Russia is the number one enemy. He should have known better. But he panicked. He didn't want it. He thought it would be a problem for him. He should have done something about it. He didn't. Okay. So let's say if nothing happens, good.
A year passed and nothing happened.
A year passed, yes.
And nothing happened.
Yes.
But then?
A long time.
Well, we know the Russians like to play the long game. They're very good at it.
The question is, why do you think they waited for a year?
For him to get comfortable, for him to relax, for him to feel good,
or
the fact that
or
his condition changed.
Or to see if he did report it, okay?
Okay,
now,
also option.
If he did report it, are you going to compromise by someone meeting him in Tallinn and wait for something to happen?
Report what, though? What do you report?
If it happened to you, not talking about to you, if it happened to someone and they'll tell you, okay, if someone approaches you, you let us know immediately. because he doesn't have any means of contact. He hasn't. All he has is a story. He doesn't have anything to back it up with. They will tell him, okay, we understood. Thank you for telling us. If someone approaches you, you immediately let us know. And he goes on with his life.
Right.
Now, the Russians are saying to themselves, if he went to someone and reported it, if we're going to send someone there, it's a risk for them to get caught, because he will then immediately notify someone and they will arrange something, and then the guy will get into trouble.
So they're testing what kind of a person he is as well.
No, I'm saying they did something else. I'm saying they probably had other resources to see if it was reported.
So they had a mole, maybe. Inside.
I'm saying, I don't say that a mole. I said they had
sources,
capabilities to see if this thing was reported.
Okay.
If that's what you're going to do, that's what I think. That's why it took them a year.
Okay.
They said, let's take our time. We made the approach. Let's see what happens.
He's also not a high priority at this point. He's not very advanced.
They made an operation
career
to get something. A year is a long time to wait. I say, okay, it's the long game. Yes.
But we already discussed this in another episode. The Russian service is much better than other services at playing the long game and waiting and biding their time and getting the seeds planted for later.
If they would have waited 6 months, it would have been okay as well. A year is a long time.
Okay. A year did pass, though. Autumn 2008, Metsavas was in Tallinn, Estonia, leaving his mother's house. Once again, it's the mother's family. Ah, another thing about the relatives, maybe. Interesting. He's leaving his mother's house when a man approached him.
But his father does not live there anymore.
Yes, but he was visiting his mother's family also in Smolensky, so interesting. You've put a seed in my mind about the family thing. It connects now. Maybe he's visiting the mother's house, and I don't know. Interesting. Anyway, so he leaves his mother's house, and a man approaches him speaking Russian.
Remember what happened in Smolensk? Don't worry. Just want to help you.
He was told to go back to Russia. That same year, 2008, Metsavas traveled to St. Petersburg and was picked up by a man named Anton. Metsavas, unsure if that was his real name, Anton would become Metsavas's handler. Metsavas, naturally, at first was quite scared, because Anton seemed to know everything about him. He did his homework. We're in different territory now. So now we're talking about the second approach. He has another chance here.
Yes.
He's approached now.
This is a big chance to come clean.
He's approached in Estonia, too.
Yes.
He's safe, quote unquote. No one's holding it. I mean, even if he did rape the woman in Russia and it was real, he's in Estonia. There's no jurisdiction, as far as I know. So yes, he's safe from prosecution.
No, he didn't rape the woman.
He didn't, I know. But I'm just saying that, like, the most extreme thing that even if he did and they're blackmailing him for whatever, but he's safe. So
why go back?
Why go back? What's the worry? Is the embarrassment, the family threats, which we're going to see in a minute. What's the thought process? What could he have done at this moment?
Well, we talked about it earlier. He immediately should have gone, approached his superiors, discussed it, and let them say to them, let's play the double game. You know, let's see what they want. Let's see what it's all about. Or if you don't want me to go, I won't go. And then we'll see what happens. Or if you want me to go, let's see what, I'll report back and tell you what's going on. What's the limitations? What can I say or not say? You know, you do something. The fact that he decided to go back was was the biggest mistake, because that's a step you can't go back from. He could have gone back from the first approach when he was compromised and shown a video, because he thought nothing would come out of it. But the moment he was approached and he didn't report it, that's when the Russians got him. Now, it's interesting that all he was told was to go somewhere, and probably told him, we'll make contact with you. And
go to a location at time.
Because we don't know all the information. Yeah. He was told where to go, what to go. Yeah. But again, it wasn't going back to the small city.
No.
It was going to a big city.
St. Petersburg.
St. Petersburg. Okay. Why would he go there? Why would an Estonian go there? You know, it's not not far away from the border.
Yeah,
it's
St. Petersburg's close to
Estonia. It's not so far, and maybe a lot of people go all the time. They go shopping, they come. But he's a military guy. You know, military guys are not supposed to be doing this on a regular basis, moving from one side to another. And he did it.
Again, because of the Russian
family.
Now, the other
thing is, Anton, and I don't know if we saw it or we heard about it, never actually met him in Tallinn.
No, never. Never, okay. Of course not.
Because it was too valuable.
Of course.
Okay. So they realized, as well, to protect themselves, that if they want to see him at this stage, it's not going to be in Estonia. They made a contact.
As far as we know, the only time he was contacted in Estonia was.
Well, afterwards, there was some other stuff. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, but
yes,
that initial
correct.
Thing.
So they knew they to run him now, as they do. You run him out of Estonia, and the question is, where's the best place to do it without being caught or compromised? Because that will dictate as well how they run him.
Now, the advantage of him having family in Russia is that the excuse is I'm visiting family. That's
yes.
why he can go over the border.
In some ways, yes.
What was scary was that Anton seemed to know everything about him and did his homework. This is obvious. You do
yes.
your homework. You do
yes.
your research. That's a natural thing. When you're dealing with an asset or an agent or something, you have to research and have the upper hand on the situation,
well,
right?
Well, he was not recruited for money. He was not recruited for ideology. And he was not recruited because he volunteered. He was recruited because he was blackmailed.
This is the first
it's
time we're dealing with this
with
kind
like
of
that.
Story.
Yes.
Except if you could think maybe Vetrov with the car crash, but that...
No.
Not really,
no.
because it evolved into an ideology
no.
thing anyway, so...
No.
Now, Metsavas was taken to a safe house and asked many questions about his personal life, the early stages of his career, as well as simple questions about the Estonian military infrastructure and equipment, things that were easy to find answers to online. Metsavas saying that that's why he didn't feel like he was acting like a spy or a traitor, because at that point, he thought they were playing amateur hour. Metsavas was also offered a small amount of money for expenses. Later, he admitted that he understood by accepting the money in exchange for the information, it was essentially a first step. Now you have also a financial transaction.
Well, that's what you call step by step, you bring him closer to no return. You don't start with a heavy question.
Sure. You make him feel that it's simple, easy things. They're just asking simple questions that they can find online.
Every
so
step,
it's not bad
every
that I
question
tell him.
Brings you closer to him being further away from allowing himself to go back on his stuff.
Right. And it's comforting to him in some ways. Like, if you go, what's the national carrier of France? And you go, Air France, duh. It's like, okay, I'm not telling them anything confidential.
Can I get paid for it?
Okay. Yeah, okay,
right,
sure,
you.
No problem. But from a recruitment point of view, the steps that the GRU took, I mean, it's perfect. Perfectly executed on their behalf, you could say,
well,
thus far.
So far, yes.
Of course, there was also this one looming element that was never explicitly stated, but it was understood that his family was threatened with an accident happening to them if he didn't cooperate. This was implied with various questions about his mother's flower shop and his father's health. You know, the usual things that you can assume might occur.
The subtle questions that that is brought up just to remind him where his loyalties should lie.
Yes. And how were those tulips your mother ordered last week? Did they all arrive safely? I understood that the flat tire really delayed her getting to the shop. Such questions, you know.
No, there's other ways to put it, but...
Want to give an example?
No. I don't have any. On the flower issue, no.
Not on the flower issue?
No.
How is your father's health? It'd be a shame if it took a turn. Something like that?
Well, about treatment. About, you know, closing down roads, about needing to close down the shop for health reasons.
Mm.
You know, things that are more on a general idea that you can do to damage someone's livelihood.
Right. Metsavas, after the meeting, asked if they were done. They said no. They were interested in continuing. And they arranged to meet again in December.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
In all the years that Metsavas would eventually work with Anton, he didn't ever really learn much about him. He didn't even know what intelligence service he was working for. until the Estonian capo told him. He did understand that Anton had a military background due to his comfort in use of the military jargon, and Anton expressed particular interest in Ukraine and Georgia, both of which were places that Metsavas had been to as an artillery liaison officer. Now, not knowing who your handler works for or what it is they do is quite an interesting concept, because you think it might be obvious from the outside that, like, oh, we're going to go recruit and you know who you're working for. But sometimes, whether you don't know the agency specifically, but sometimes people don't even know the country or that they're even doing something, right? Is it possible, for instance, for agents to create like a fake company, let's say, and people work for them in that manner and they don't even realize that they're offering some sort of service?
Well, I think you know the answer to that. But the question is different. The question
is... Fake offices with fake secretaries in places and...
You read too many novels. The thing is this...
Oh, you mean my history lesson?
The thing is this. Did the handler spend time on making it pleasant? Did they go out for dinners? Did they go out for walks and talk about stuff? Or was it, we meet in safe houses, you're debriefed and briefed, then off you go, you get some money, and he didn't know, he didn't feel like there's a relationship of someone who wants to nourish him. It's, they didn't try to develop into a Russian lover, you would say. They wanted information, and they really, all the time, probably showed him who's the masters and who's not. And he didn't feel comfortable to ask any questions because he didn't want to know anything. From his point of view, it wasn't a relationship of a friendship relationship. Even though he had maybe a case officer or a handler for a long time, there wasn't any personal relationship developed.
I think this goes back to what was said about the difference between the KGB back in the day and also the GRU. That with the KGB, you might think it's a certain type of thing. And the GRU, they're business, the hunchback,
I don't think.
But also the manner of the recruitment. You know, this is a recruitment based on blackmail. It's not a recruitment based on ideology.
It's a recruitment in Russia. It's like a recruitment, you would say, in China or in other places where you play the tough guy, you get caught, and you play the big numbers. I do it for 50 people. 45 of them will say no. 5 of them will say yes. And those 5 I run. And some of them, they'll say no. Some of them will say, okay, send my wife the pictures. I want her to see how we perform, and to send it to my friends as well. So, okay, I can't blackmail you. Rape is a different thing. To be in North Korea, you know, for even more minor things, people get life sentences. When you go to certain places and you behave a certain way, and then actually you're approached by the authorities, you don't have a good chance to get out of it easily. So
exactly why he wanted to get out as fast as possible.
He got out, but he didn't do what he should have done. He didn't go all the way out by telling his superiors that this is what happened. And they that's what they were waiting for. They were hoping that would happen. And again, it's the numbers. You do it to 20 people, 30 people, maybe you get out of it 2 or 3. It's a great success.
They asked him about Ukraine. This is pre-Ukraine invasion. It's quite possible that they were planning stuff.
Well, they were planning on Crimea. But so it was there anyway. And Ukraine is not a member of NATO, wasn't a member of Europe at that stage from the point of view of the European Union. It made sense that there will be some kind of question marks over that. And again, I think they were happy to ask him. He was happy to answer questions that are not necessarily related to his own country. And that's something as well we'll talk about a bit later about his loyalties. But
he was part of the artillery defense systems,
yes,
coordinating those. And so very relevant for Russia if they're going to be planning an invasion to know what the capabilities are for the opponent's artillery. As Metsavas' career progressed, his value to the GRU only increased, and his interactions with Anton became more complicated, detailed, and dangerous. He was asked questions about Estonia's military allies, particularly the U.S. and the U.K. What weaponry and ammunition did they store in Estonia? They wanted to know about the U.S.'s activities outside of Estonia as well. The U.S. was their strongest interest. As can be imagined, Russia is always interested in what U.S. is doing. Anton was not concerned with Estonia's own defense capability, but rather what it was receiving from its stronger allies. Which again makes sense. Estonia militarily, it's a small country, doesn't have that much capabilities, but it's a connection because of the NATO and other things to
Correct.
Many other pieces. Now, how was the information passed along? Well, by and large, we don't know too much because this is relatively recent and they don't want the GRU to know how much they know about the methods of transfer of information. But what we do know is that it was leaked generally along telecommunication methods and really in meetings, you know, with contacts.
I think mainly in meetings, that's what we understand.
Yeah. I mean, there might have been the occasional WhatsApp, Skype, whatever, picture, different things, but more
verbal
and, you know, take a picture of a document. Apparently some documents were stolen, whether that be physically stolen or copied and taken and passed to Anton in St. Petersburg. Only part of the documents that were leaked is known. And essentially, it mainly dealt with Allied troops in Estonia, the military infrastructure, and of course, the cooperation with other military partners. Metsavas's position in work later would bring him into the operations center and involved the development of fire support and use of firepower and defense plans. Weapon specifications were not particularly the GRU's main interest. As I said, it was really more mobilization capabilities, which Estonia had recently and repeatedly tested, about this short-notice reservist training stuff and general defense plans and Allied troop placements. Now, the reservist training and mobilization is very critical because that's preventing a potential invasion type of situation. Like, how fast can they get their troops up and running to defend the country? So, you know, Russia did what it did to Ukraine, Estonia, and all the neighbors and former Soviet Union places.
Obviously, it's on a border. They have an army, and they, of course, they're part of NATO. So
they are NATO, though. So
it brings it in a different category.
In 2013, after Metsavas served in Afghanistan, having experienced the combat zone camaraderie with his fellow Estonians and other NATO allies, the feeling of belonging and getting also better finances because their pay was a lot higher when you're in a war zone, Metsavas planned to see Anton in St. Petersburg in order to tell him that he wanted to end things. He was no longer interested in continuing. He couldn't do it. But the GRU was extremely skilled at keeping him on the hook because they told Metsavas that his father, Volin, had gotten in touch. Or rather, they had gotten in touch with him. You see, while Metsavas was on a mission in Afghanistan, his father, Volin, had agreed to help Moscow in exchange for money. His father, who was always pro-Russian, had a new wife who had become very ill. And he was approached by the GRU, and he agreed to work with them in order for payment to help treat his wife. Now, Metsavas couldn't get out because his father was involved too, and presumably they would have told him that his son was also involved. Another little hook for them to use and toy.
Yes.
Fathers, always making things difficult to their sons.
I think that's how it should be. Don't you think so?
I don't know. Fathers really just make things really difficult for their sons.
Yeah.
Especially if they're involved in espionage.
Put down the cup.
What do you think about the whole father trap?
I think they realized that, you know, he was not happy working for them. There was no other motive. The money wasn't the main issue. He was proud to be Estonian, as we see later as well. His loyalties were not 100% with the Russians. They felt it. And the fact that he came to the case officer, to the handler, and said, I want to get out, I think they already felt it before then, and they needed some more leverage on him. And the father in Vladivostok is
way away.
Seven time zones probably from where they are now, approached him as a Russian patriot and told him...
Former KGB,
maybe,
adjacent.
Maybe, but telling him, listen, we need your help, we need your assistance...
And we'll help you because
your wife's sick, and we might need you in the future. They already made a contact, just in case. And
they used it.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's interesting that Metsavas went to meet with Anton to tell him that he didn't want to continue. Now, that's a ballsy move. You know,
that was naive because you don't say that.
That's what I was going to say.
What do you think is going to happen? They're going to say thank you?
Exactly. I mean, you go to St. Petersburg...
Well, first of all,
you tell him?
Well, first of all, it tells us they didn't want to meet him. Let's put it this way. They were meeting him mainly in Russia. And if he wanted to do it, he should have done that, not in Russia.
Maybe he couldn't, but I think, you know...
Because they only met him in Russia, probably.
He also just got back from Afghanistan. So I think you have the bravado of...
They didn't meet him in Afghanistan. They didn't meet him in other places.
No, no, but I'm saying from his point of view, he had just been to Afghanistan. He had been through war. He's like, I need to end this. So he wasn't afraid when he went. And again, he wasn't thinking maybe the ramifications of, well, we're not going to let you leave. They could have just killed him, for instance, you know, prevented him from whatever.
He was a soldier. He felt part of Estonia. Yeah. And he didn't want to continue this anymore.
Yeah. As fate would have it, in 2014, a year later, Russia caught a Capo counterintelligence officer, and after a year in prison, he was exchanged for a Russian FSB spy captured by Estonia. This incident led to the Estonian government issuing a general advisory banning state and military personnel from traveling to Russia without approval. Metsovas thinking that he was finally free since he was forbidden to travel to Russia. But his father, Volin, had moved back to Tallinn, and it was arranged that he would become a courier for Metsovas. The plot thickens. Again, those fathers just causing all sorts of trouble.
I don't know what you're going to do about it.
Or it's the sons causing trouble. I mean, you could just throw it back at me. I mean, the son was the one who got in all the trouble, right?
I mean, what am I doing here talking about this? You got me into this trouble.
I did. It's interesting that they end up working together suddenly on this. So Metsovas is still getting the information. He can't get to Russia, so he's giving it then to his father. His father is then traveling into Russia with the information and handing it to Anton. So we know that essentially all of that stuff happened on the Russian side of the border. They didn't meet in Estonia, too dangerous, all those other reasons.
They couldn't meet because they were probably they'll be exposed, so they didn't feel comfortable enough. The father could travel. He's a Russian. As you said, he lived in Russia, came back. He's not a threat. I wondered if he came back with his new wife. I suppose he did. If he had other children, we don't know. That's not the issue here. But he settled in Tallinn, and he was the courier. What does it mean? It means he could travel. No one says he cannot travel because there's no permit that he says he cannot. It means that the son had to trust his father with information. And probably it was not only verbal. He probably had to write reports or give something because if he phoned Anton, he probably just spoke and Anton wrote the stuff down or taped it or whatever. Here, it's not the same. So it had to be something more substantial.
Yeah, and maybe there were ciphers, maybe there were secret things
and
or hidden
it wasn't,
things. But
now, you would say, why does he use communications? It looks like he didn't have any communication means to have direct communications. So the question is, did the father come back with questions from Anton? We don't know.
Again, a lot of this stuff they don't want to know about the methodology.
Yes, but there's a whole issue there of that exchange.
At the same time, and over the years, Russia's aggression against its neighbors and its annexation of Crimea worried the nations around it. There was a war of PR and misinformation by Russia and campaigns to fight against this. Estonia's military was a part of this battle in showcasing Estonian soldiers who could speak against Russia and be living evidence of its lies. One of the lies being that Russians can never integrate into other societies and other societies are racist and Nazis and all this other stuff. Now, Metsovas became a poster boy of the Estonian military and of Russian integration into it. He became a spokesman for the army. He was invited to Russian language TV and radio shows. He spoke at high schools and escorted students on military exercises. He was vocal about his patriotism to Estonia and against Russian propaganda. He became a symbol for Estonian inclusiveness and tolerance. One of the few Russian-speaking officers to reach the rank of major as of 2015. He was extremely patriotic. Questioned once by a guest on a show about the loyalty of Estonian Russians serving in the Estonian Defense Forces, Metsovas strongly rejected such thoughts. He was the perfect example of loyalty to Estonia, the living proof of it. Some might argue the living proof in more ways than one.
Very interesting dilemma here, because as a handler, you would say, wow, what a great asset. I'm actually sitting in with a guy that is actually doing all this stuff. But they can't actually make him say things that are not in their favor. So actually, what he's saying goes against Russia.
But it's a great cover.
The cover is great. He was there. I wouldn't, if he was that, it was his job. I would put it in a different way. The harm he did by getting caught makes it more difficult for them to have more agents and run more people from the Russian minority in Estonia.
Yeah, so him getting caught made it much more difficult for all the Russian
minority. For any other for a pool of other people that they could have used, because it puts a dent on any other one who wants maybe to go ahead or do something, or for them to recruit more people like him. So if you look at it in the bigger picture, it's a mistake to have a guy like that. Because if he doesn't get caught, great. But if he gets caught, you really are not doing, you're ruining your chances and making a bad name for yourself.
Because other people are going to be harder time getting recruited.
And it means that the Russian minority there will be being more hostile. But then you could say, okay, maybe that's what they want. Maybe they don't want integration. Maybe the big picture is for them, to the Russian minority, not to be part of Estonia. And therefore, let's get him get caught. And then they won't. Then all the others will feel there's no chance for them to be real Estonians. And then eventually they'll close to Russia. So you know what? It's a bigger picture. It's a
the
bigger
geopolitics
game.
It's already something.
It's in a different league. It's not about any more information, because in his position, they were not able to say, okay, I want you to say one or two or three or four. No. And of course, they didn't want it to be caught. That wasn't the game for them, because you know he could have become in more interesting positions later on in life if he would have just had his way. So I don't think they wanted him get caught. And I don't think they enjoyed him being on television and saying the things they did, because no one's going to say, oh, man, you see this guy, this is our guy. What are you going to, you can't even say anything about it. So
Could say there's an element of pride that, like, you see him saying all that anti-Russian stuff. He's actually one of us. It's all fake.
It's all fake, but he is saying something that's true.
Sure.
Because he is talking about other things.
Right.
But if you get caught, then what does it do?
The big picture, as you said, is that him eventually getting caught and revealed as a spy damaged not just the GRU's and other Russian services' ability to hire people, but also the Russian minority's ability to integrate into these societies. So it's a blow for all of them.
You're doing a very bad job for minorities who want to integrate into a majority in a country. And by running them, you are then jeopardizing all of them, not only one, and making him the face of them as the spokesman, as the spearhead. There's a price to pay for that. And they eventually had to pay a price.
It's sad for all the Estonians in
Russian,
all
Estonians
the Russian Estonians
who really want to be part of Estonian, and they not can't be 100% trusted.
Yeah, especially after an incident like this.
Yes.
It's a blow to the ability there. In 2015, Metsavas learned he was going to be a father with the woman he had been seeing for years. 2016, they married, and he realized that there was no going back now with the Russians. It was no longer just himself, but his family. Metsavas was serving as a staff officer at the military headquarters in Tallinn in the artillery inspectorate. He was attached to the department preparing the overall defense strategy. He was already, you know, a very good position.
Yes.
Major of one of the most visible army people in Estonia at the time, especially certainly from the Russian minority there. He was a symbol of all these things. Perfect for the GRU in so many ways, but like you said, also problematic. And then on September 3rd, 2018, as mentioned in the opening dramatization, Metsavas dropped his son off and was arrested, along with his father, Volin, on suspicion of passing damaging state and international secrets to the GRU. Metsavas said,
"Somehow, I was ready to be arrested. I thought about it thousands of times. I just didn't know where or when or how it would happen."
Metsavas pleaded guilty in trial. He cooperated with the Estonian counterintelligence. Metsavas and his father, having received a total of about 20,000 euro from Russia over the years. That's less than 2,000 euros a year. Not too much, really. I mean, it was more about the blackmailing than the money. But you think from his father's perspective, you know, paying for the medical thing, that's really quite strange. February 11th, 2019, Metsavas was convicted of treason and sentenced to 15 years and 6 months. His father, Volin, was sentenced to 6 years, seeing as he was only a courier in the grander scheme. How was Metsavas discovered? That information is classified. Was it a counterintelligence operation? Were they keeping tabs on GRU agents? It's unknown even when Metsavas first appeared on the Estonian intelligence services radar. Any thoughts?
Well, we talked about it in other podcasts. you might have someone in the Russian side who then they found out there is someone passing on information about certain elements that came into their knowledge, and maybe from a third country telling them that you have a mole and this is information. They found out who was able to give information and they follow him, and then they find out what's going on and they realize this is where it's coming from. Obviously, they waited for some time. They had all the information before they arrested him. They had everything. So they had him followed. They had him listening. They had the father. They arrested him immediately together. They didn't arrest anyone else. They were looking at it, I would say, a little bit more longer than you would think, to get more information or to make sure. It wasn't like, okay, let's take him now.
It wasn't an overnight thing.
They didn't need to catch him with papers in his hands. It took him when he was leaving with his son, dropping off at kindergarten. Okay, they could have done it the day before. They could have done it a week later. No, or they could have done it when he gave him information. They didn't need that. That means they had everything in there and they needed. Now, the other thing is, was the weakest link here the father? Did the father say something he shouldn't have? Because we don't talk about the father at all here. Does the father was the one who said something? Did the father going in and out of, they had information about him going in and out, and they had him talk, someone talk about him, and through that they found about him, and then they through the father they got to the son, and then they realized that the father was
unknown.
We don't know.
Undisclosed.
So we don't know.
Now it's so they don't want to share the information because they don't want the GRU to know as
exactly.
Well.
And that's okay. And that's how it should be. And we're not going to give ideas that are not there or not right or wrong. But what was interesting is that he immediately confessed. That was, for me, the interesting thing, because he was like, okay, at last, I'm willing to spill the beans. I can't continue because...
He didn't want to.
He didn't really want to do what he did. It wasn't... He would have had a great career if it wouldn't have been for the Russians. They didn't help him. They didn't tell him to do things. He didn't get to his positions because of what they told him to go. He went according to his own merit. But the Russians got hold of him and were able to squeeze him, and he was caught. The biggest mistake, as we said, was in the beginning you should have approached the authorities, then everything would have been different. But this is not the case.
General Riho Terras, the commander of the defense forces in Estonia, when asked how much damage Metsavas could have done, replied, "We need to expect the worst. The defense forces and Estonian national defense have suffered a grave wound."
Yes. You know, a new country, they want to bring the people together. They want loyalty. They want to integrate Russian people into the system. They want Russian-speaking people because they need it for the language. They want to, for internally, they want as well not to have people feel that they're not their second-rate citizens. It hurts them in many ways.
And the information as well.
The information,
about the artillery defenses and the movements and all this other stuff. And we don't know the extent of it, so we don't know how deep the information was shared.
So there's the intelligence is one thing, but it's the image.
I think the image is a bigger blow.
Yes.
Certainly.
For everybody.
Also, again, bringing the fact that he was this symbol. It's a symbol of hope and security this stuff. It's very difficult. Imagine whatever country you're listening from, a symbol of whatever it might be, a symbol of, you know what? Take Lance Armstrong, okay? With Tour de France. What a symbol. And then there was the whole doping scandal. Even though later it was debunked, afterwards a different thing. It's a very complicated thing. But he was such a powerful thing for so many people, and then it was crushed. So it's that kind of idea. You have this symbol that then is, or Michael Jackson, the symbol of whatever, and then that's crushed from...
I don't want to get into names here. You're going to be... people are going to lawsuit against you for saying they did something bad or not bad. That's not the point.
Now, what's interesting is that Estonia deals with spies in quite a unique and unusual way. It names the agents and shames them. The names are given to the media freely, and there's a video of the arrest. Now, most countries don't talk about spy busts. They avoid the diplomatic fallout and shame, but not Estonia. It points a finger and says, this is what happened. In fact, you can go on Google and type in Denis Metsavas's name, and you can find a video of his arrest when they approach him at his car, and you see his face when they tell him, you're under arrest for espionage. And it's a very...
Well, it's as
powerful image of his face reacting to that information.
Yes, but it's not only that. It's as well for evidence for court.
Well, that too, of course. Now, Alexander Toots, the deputy director in 2008 of Estonia's counterintelligence, said,
"There are a lot of myths about the Russian services, that they are invincible and we cannot counter them. We won't accept that. This has to get to be seen as uncomfortable territory for them to operate in."
The Atlantic interview that I quoted earlier by Michael Weiss is partially part of this publicity for capturing Russian spies. This podcast as well, I'm sure they would be happy to hear about, because we're publicizing the events. As far as Estonia is concerned, this is exactly what they want. Name and shame, the information out there. Maybe I should contact the Estonian government. What do you think?
Did they approach you?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Since 2008, the Estonian courts have convicted 6 people for treason and another 12 of collaboration with the Russian Special Services, 5 with the GRU, with Metsavas being the 5th. In March 8th of 2019, the president of Estonia signed a directive stripping Metsavas of all of his officer ranks due to his conviction of treason. He was a major at the time. And finally, in June of 2023, Metsavas's father, Volin, was released a year early before the end of his term. Previously, he had appealed in October of 2020, but was denied.
I want to talk about not only his release, but I want to ask you, he was released and then he stayed in Estonia or he went back to Russia?
I don't know. I don't have that information.
Okay. I would say the big question for me would be, when Metsavas finishes his term, does he stay in Estonia as an Estonian or goes to Russia? Now, my gut feeling is there's nothing for him in Russia.
Nothing there.
He's an Estonian.
Also, he has a son and a wife.
Yes, if they stay with him, that's nice, but that's we don't know. But from his point of view, he's an Estonian.
He's a tragic character in my mind.
I agree. I mean, he made a mistake. But
big mistake.
In the end, his heart was Estonian. That means even if he's released now or released when he's released, I don't think he's going to be, if he'll be like, let's exchange him for someone else. He doesn't want to go to Russia.
No.
He doesn't want to go there.
No.
He would like to be released, yes, but to be exchanged? He would like his freedom, but would he want to live in Russia?
Or let me ask you a different question. Would Russia like him to be there? Probably not either.
No, they don't have anything to do with him. Okay, they could find something for him to do, but that's not a life for him. He would like to go back and live in Estonia, or he'll have to move somewhere
else. He would love
to
go back to the Estonian military, I think, but that's never going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Big question. What does a guy like that...
Stripped of his rank, stripped of everything he had worked his life for.
Well, you know, he betrayed his country. Although he would have wanted to die for it. That's the irony of it.
The tragedy of it.
Yes.
Mark Galeotti, a Russian expert at the Institute of International Relations in Prague, said that some of the operational security blunders conducted by the GRU could be linked to the high tempo of the operations that they take, meaning that they're having to spend less time in preparation and also that they aren't able to rely on their A teams all the time. And this exposure of their operations is a kind of byproduct. What do you think?
I don't agree. I don't know if any. I don't want to say that.
I mean, you said that they're doing 20 operations and if 4 succeed, then that's great, right? You said that earlier as well.
Right.
Now, other agencies won't do 20 and see if 4 succeed. They'll do 8 or they'll do only 4,
no.
But 3 of them will succeed.
No.
No? All agencies, all everything will do 20?
The odds are always the big numbers.
The odds are always the big numbers. So you don't think this whole characterization of the GRU of being these rough hunchbacks who throw caution to the wind and just do everything is apt?
No.
You don't agree with it?
No.
Okay. Fair enough. The long game. Building for the future. Russia seems to be very good at it. Why? Are others? Do others even try? What are the pros and cons of such an approach?
Well, there's two things that stick in mind for me here. One is that it's not a success of a specific person if you recruit or don't recruit, but it's the success of an organization. That means you're not looking for immediate glorification. That means if you make contact with someone, you can wait a couple of years to gain something from it. And that means it's not on your book of success, that maybe other intelligence organizations will feel more that they want it to be on their...
End of year report.
Yes. The other thing is that a lot of these case officers hold their agents for a long time. It's not usually so common. But if the Russians, if you look at it, the Russians, and we've seen it maybe in a couple of more cases, but I don't know how it is today, the fact that someone runs someone for 10 or 15 years is not, means, okay, so I won't see him for 2 years. I'll see him again in 4 years. I still see him. If I'm still around and he's still around, we'll see him. I don't have to send him to someone else. It's not every 2 years or every 3 years you change a handler. Now, that's playing the long game as well. That means you have patience. And you take someone when he's maybe very young and he's maybe just in the beginning of his career, and you say, okay, I can work with the guy because I know I can handle him in 20 years' time as well, because I know how to keep him going for 20 years. I'm not going to now jeopardize him. That's why they only met him, or at least we understand they met him mainly in Russia, not in Tallinn, not in Estonia. They didn't even meet him in other European countries he went to, because there, obviously, immediately they will be suspicious. And if he went some of these places, maybe if it's in Belgium where the NATO headquarters are, or other countries that he went to, maybe they'll be followed, and the Russian, anyone who is from the Russian embassy or is going to be suspicious of being an agent or handling agents are going to see who is meeting or bring someone specially to see him. It's complicated. As long as he can travel and he was able to travel into Russia, that's the easiest thing for them. The moment he was not able to travel to Russia, they had to come up with a solution. And they came up with a solution. Yeah. So they got in the father. Now, the father was a good target. One, he was in Russia. Second, he was a loyalist. He had a Russian citizenship, and he was someone they could trust. So they didn't have none of the handlers were ever, and as far as we understand, were prosecuted or caught, because you would think they would wait, the Estonians would wait to catch a Russian handling, because that's what you really want to do. You want to catch a handler. You want to get more information. You want to see who else is seeing. They didn't. So from their point of view, you know, they know how to handle someone in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an art that not every agency knows how to do, for different reasons.
You mentioned the father again, and it goes back to thinking how Metsavas was caught. And here's someone who's a pensioner. He could go back and forth maybe more frequently into Russia, and maybe there's more questions as why he's doing it. You know, what family are you visiting in Russia? You're not a young man visiting your uncle and aunt. I'm just positing. It just came to mind that you said.
Obviously the father didn't go back to Tallinn on his own will. He was asked to do that to serve the Russian. Now, to do that, they would have something put together. That means they'll have him have a good story why he's continuing to go back to Russia.
I mean, he could have kept his wife there, maybe.
I wouldn't do that. Business ties. Okay. He's buying and selling something. Sells cars.
Okay. Sells parts. Some sort of cover story.
Some kind of commercial element. Why he has to come in and out and travel as he does. Easy
to come up with a cover story.
For him as a Russian who's moved back and backwards and forwards. I wouldn't send him to Vladivostok. It's a long way.
Right. Sure.
But to St. Petersburg is easy. He sets up a little shop, a connection. He goes, he has to sell something. He sends brochures. He buys something. He buys samples in Tallinn. He takes him in his car. He drives. He sells them in a market. They'll find something. I don't see that as a problem.
I think the biggest missed opportunity here is why not turn Metsavas into a double agent?
Because you want to send a message to the Russians here. In this case, they wanted to send a message and to deter them, and they didn't. They probably followed him for some time. They saw what kind of information he's giving. To run into a double agent, this is not the Second World War. It's not tactical. What information is he going to give? They're going to have to fabricate information that's good enough.
Hmm.
It's a big story to do.
And I suppose Anton was not giving him
any
information.
He's not going to get information from the Russians.
And he can't travel to Moscow.
He can't travel. So what is it to gain?
However, if in the beginning,
that's a different story. Then you're looking at it differently.
So the opportunity for becoming a double agent would have existed maybe in the beginning, potentially, yes, to do some sort of scheme.
You would think so, yes.
But towards the end, with the travel restriction, with the relationship
and
already established.
And his position is, what you're going to say is not going to say something that's not true, because they don't want to say anything that's true. They don't want them, the Russians, to know. It becomes more complicated.
So really, Metsavas's big mistakes were in the beginning.
Yes.
And that changed the course of his life, the trajectory of it completely.
Yes.
Shame.
Look, it's spies and lies, you know.
Would you hire him?
As what?
Good question.
If I was running an agent like that, it's a good... If I'm a Russian, yes, you want someone like that. You do. Because someone is in the other side. If I'm a Russian and I want someone in to tell me information about NATO or about what's going on in the West and is positioned and is young and is going up, yes, you want agents like that. How you run him, that's a different question. I don't want to go into it. But do you use a... Look, you have to remember something else as well, what Medvedev said. He had double loyalty. He was run under blackmail. He was wants to get out a number of times. Now, he might have said it just to pacify his... the people who caught him, but you could say that this is the reality. He didn't want to be in the position he is in, and the Russians were not able to turn him to become someone who's going to work for them, not under blackmail.
He was always reluctant.
It's a sad story from the human point of view of someone using someone else under a false story. But, you know...
Well executed.
They did. The Russians did their job, and this guy was unlucky.
In his interview with Michael Weiss for The Atlantic, when asked why he did it, Metsavas replied,
"For so many years, two persons were inside of me. It is very difficult for me to explain. I don't really know. I was asked, what would I do if war started with Russia? My answer was that I would fight for Estonia. I understand it's hard to explain how, on the one hand, I can spy for Russia, and on the other hand, I'm speaking patriotic stuff on television. One part of that identity is what I hate. The other part is who I am."
This was Spies and Lies. Thanks for listening. And remember,
going out to a nightclub in Russia never ends up well, even though you think it does.
Spies and Lies is a Grumpy Golem production, with original scoring and mastering by Julien Dussault. If you enjoyed listening, don't forget to share with your friends and leave a comment or review wherever you listen from. Also, you could leave us a 5-star review if you enjoyed listening. Just be nice and write something cool and fun. As well, if you have any questions for us for the Season 2 Q&A, send them our way through our Facebook page, or you can email us at grumpygolemproduction@gmail.com. If you have any questions or subjects you'd like for my father and I to cover, drop us a message, and we'll do our best to get back to you. Until next time.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.